Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Austin Healy, and this is the Rugby Tonight podcast. This week, I'm joined by Lawrence Salelio. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, Austin.
Not yet. I'll get to you later. Okay. We're going to take stock of an eventful few weeks of international rugby, and we're also going to look ahead to a huge weekend in the Aviva Premiership with four games live on BT Sport. But before we get into all of that, here's a quick taste of what else will be coming up on the pod. Ali Eakin spent some time at Wasps chatting to Elliot Daly on his return from the England camp.
We were ready, definitely, for the season, but mentally we probably thought it would just happen. When we had a couple of losses, we got down to it and were like, right, we need to get back on this now. We want to get back into that final game. That's what we want to do. So we needed to perform, and luckily we got a couple of wins, and now the squad's looking good and bolstered and ready to go.
And Saracens and England star Mako Vunipola was our guest for the live studio show.
I used to love watching John Lowell, just the way that he kind of destroyed players on the field.
So, Lol, autumn internationals, pretty good. I mean, I can't remember most of them. I was with you in the green room and maybe had one or two too many drinky poos along the way.
Yeah, I think it was a successful autumn international series for most of the teams. What do we take out of it? Well, England, Ireland and New Zealand went unbeaten. So, basically, number one in the world, New Zealand, are still number one. Number two in the world, England are still number two, and number
and Andy Murray's number three. He's had a difficult start to the year. He's now number three.
Well, it's the first year he's not going to be Sports Personality of the Year. So,
who are you going to go for whilst we're on the subject?
I noticed there's no rugby players there, is there?
Shouldn't be any rugby players, really, should it? It's team sport. Chris Froome has to win it for me.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I don't know. Anthony Joshua.
Oh, come on. He's only beaten one good guy. if he's here, then Joshua gets it, obviously. But he's not here, so we give it to Chris Froome.
Exactly. Now, Froome deserves it. He was third, wasn't he, last time, I thought? Yeah. So he's got a chance anyway. No rugby players, which is interesting. But Ireland have moved up to number three. So if we start with England... Well, it's the two-year period now, isn't it, after Eddie Jones has taken over. They've got an amazing win record, 95%. I think when he first took over, you'd have to say he made quite significant strides. It's probably, you know, this autumn international series has been good, but I'd say probably little steps. They've probably, you know, made little improvements. He's probably added to the talent pool in terms of the World Cup for, you know, Japan 2019. But I wouldn't say he's learned anything hugely different from a squad that he didn't already know.
No, but he's added to the trophy cabinet as well, and World Coach of the Year. I still think Owen Farrell should have got World Player of the Year. I think he's had a better year than Beauden Barrett. That's a different subject. We might get onto that later. Who knows? Probably not, because it's not that interesting. But yeah, I think take Argentina out, which was a difficult game, and it always is against Argentina. I think it's been a successful autumn. Lots of injuries. He's still at the core of his squad. Interestingly, the two players he's picked most are Rob Shaw and Ford. And yet they're still the two players that probably are spoken about the most in terms of being left out in the future. So I think he knows what he likes. And it's apparent that it's very difficult to get into that circle of trust.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at standout players from England's point of view, Elliot Daly, again, having looked like he picked up a knee injury going into the Autumn International Series, his place might have been in doubt. It's probably, well, he was voted the Old Mutual Wealth Player of the Autumn International Series, England's player. And few people could argue with that in terms of the way he took his opportunities. I was impressed with Sam Simmons in his debut as a starting number eight. Eddie Jones, I said he needs to eat more. I think what he means is he needs to be a lot bigger if he wants to survive in international rugby.
What's he going to do, put him on the rack? I mean, it's an old tactic they had in ancient England, but it was more to do with putting the Scots on it. I don't think he's going to put one of his own players on the rack, is he?
He came in the squad by saying that players need to eat less because they're too overweight, they're not fit enough. Now he's actually saying they need to eat more. So maybe if he sits next to Jamie George in training sessions and in the hotel...
And Thomas Waldron back at Exeter.
He can borrow some of his food instead. But I thought I was really impressed with the way he played, and I'd love to see him get a run at number seven. Talk to me about Henry Slade, because I think he played with enough confidence, particularly in that last game against Samoa, but... perhaps not quite done enough to sort of nail down a permanent selection.
Yeah, he's on the fringe, isn't he? I think he's a little bit like, remember when you were at school and you had to do the swimming test and put your pyjamas on and tread water? I think he's a little bit like that at the minute. He either needs to shed the pyjamas or get out the pool. Exactly. But he's definitely got to do something different because he's not going to break into that back line as a starter. He could find himself on the bench. He could find himself as a very good impact player and someone who's not just an impact player but gives them a lot of flexibility in selection because we know he can play 10, he can play 12, he can play 13. But it didn't quite work for him, did it? He was just a little bit off with his position. His passing a few times was a little bit high, sometimes behind. His pace is pretty good, but it's not electrifying. And it's those little edges at international level that stand you apart. You have to be slightly quicker than everyone else and you have to be slightly more precise. So he might miss out, but who knows? In terms of moving forward, Eddie's got probably another five players he can add to the mix now on in the next 2 years.
Yeah, and he's also got Jack Noel who's coming back. I guess Ben Teo.
Yeah.
Interestingly, what Eddie Jones hasn't done in 2 years is he's not really put a battering ram in the midfield because he's not been able to. But with Tua Lange looking like he might be on the bench for Leicester against Wasps at the weekend, I mean, if him or Ben Teo have a good run of games, then England has suddenly got different options in the midfield.
If Manu's fully fit and he stays fit until the end of the season, he'll be in the England team next year. I don't think there's any disputing that. It's the question is, like you said, who's going to miss out? But Scotland as well, I thought, were pretty good. They'll be very happy with their result against Australia, as most sides would. Australia, two of their biggest defeats ever against England and Scotland. Amazing performance from the Scots. Finn Russell is off, though, to France. We're seeing lots of this now, the Welsh guys going over the border, and now they're all sort of being reeled back in by Warren Gatland. He's got the fishing rod out and the hook's in their mouth, and they're all coming home. But everyone else seems to be thinking, oh, I quite fancy a little bit of the Euro.
I mean, I don't think the Scots can... there's not enough players for them to start putting down those kind of guidelines on their selection. And I'm sure Finn Russell will thoroughly enjoy his time at Racing and try and keep them on the straight and narrow. I was really impressed with Scotland, and Gregor Townsend seems to have brought that kind of that Gregor attacking flair of just really having a go at opponents, and suddenly they've actually become probably a very dangerous opponent for any team in the Six Nations, don't
they? It's good to see a side playing like the coach wants them to play. And that's really evident with Scotland. Really quick line-outs, very fast points of contact, mini-mauls, mini-rucks, very, very quick. And they've got individuals in that back line that can do a lot of damage. And looking forward to seeing that Scotland-England game though coming up, because Eddie Jones had a little bit of a pop, didn't he, today at them saying, well, we've heard all this before from you, Scotland. Let's find out when we get up there. And I think that could be one of the games of the Six Nations, but we'll get to that later on. New Zealand, let's move on to them, shall we? Have they lost it?
I think they certainly, you could certainly tell it was the end of a long year for them. You know, end of the season. No Kieran Reid in that last game. So I think they're always a much stronger side when he's there. I wouldn't say they've lost it. I mean, it was, you know, what people forget is that they've had one of their hardest international periods recently against the Lions. You know, so we talk about our Lions players coming back and needing a rest. Well, the New Zealand Lions players have played a series at home. That was a tough few weeks for them, both domestically and international. And then they've just got to get on a plane and you know, they do put themselves about, New Zealand. They obviously played in France, played against Wales, finished off there, Scotland. So, you know, it's been a tough schedule for them.
I think the Scots took a bit of a shine off them, which was good to see. Yeah. Did you watch the Wales game? I know it was after the England international, so you probably couldn't see the screen.
I saw the first few minutes.
And then it just got a bit blurred after around the edges.
Then I didn't really...
It was an incredible second half. I mean, unbelievably intensity they played at. I was watching it at home, and it was in one of the wings. And I can't remember which one. It was the long one. But anyway, it was
incredible... One with all your international shirts along the wall.
Yeah, along the wall. It's about 60 metres long, that corridor. The But I was watching it, and I remember thinking, oh, this is an incredible game. And then I thought, oh, there can only be 10 minutes left. I looked at the clock. Yeah. There was only 46 minutes gone.
Yeah.
And I thought, my God, those players must be absolutely exhausted. And then eventually Wales sort of gave way. But until that point, they were really good value for the way that they played. And they've got South Africa this weekend, who will, well, be dreading going to Wales the way they've played.
It's a good opportunity. I mean, as sad as it is to say, we're not even talking about South Africa being in the top few sides in the world. So I think it'd be a chance for Wales to get a good win, having been beaten by Australia again and having, as you say, come out second best against New Zealand. And it's going to be fascinating to see how Wales go after the South Africa game. But I think just finishing on New Zealand, I think the gap is closing a little bit. They're not quite the same New Zealand that were at their very peak maybe last year. I mean, they obviously continue to innovate and surprise us. But for me, the Lions series and this recent tour just shows a tiny bit of vulnerability in a few positions. And, you know, on their day, they're still the best side in the world. But I'm sure the others will be thinking, you know, in Japan, on a neutral ground, we can have a crack at them.
Yeah, I think so. They haven't got as many X-Factor players as I remember in recent times. Ioane, I thought, was very good at the weekend.
Yeah, Ioane. Reed still at his very best. The two second rows, or three second rows, Retallick, Whitelock, whoever you pick in that combination. But as you see, and Bowden Barrett, you know, is still, he's the World Player of the Year. So
he must be quite good then.
Yeah, I wouldn't write them off too much.
He's all right. Let's not write them off. But I think one of the interesting things coming out of this week in the press is Faletau and Jamie Roberts going back and playing outside the Premiership window. And some talk about the clubs being fined. I find that a bit strange.
It is very strange, but I think there's a rule that around, you know, World Rugby releasing players for international duty, but the clubs have got this kind of autumn international series, which usually lasts three games for England. The players are now back in their clubs, but for some of these other countries, Wales have organised an additional fixture. So this is where the problems lie. Faletau has actually got a clause in his contract with Bath that he can be released. So whether Bath wants to keep him or not, he's off to play international rugby. Roberts, clearly his agent's not quite as good. And he hasn't got that same release clause.
No, he's got one about free muffins. He gets free chocolate muffins at every train station he visits, which I personally would prefer than going back and playing for Wales. I don't know why the other clubs would have an objection, because if you think about it, they're not going to be playing. These great players, Faletau, is not going to be playing at the weekend against another Premiership side. So why would you object?
Well, I think because as a block of Premiership clubs, they've organised this release period, which is only for 3 weeks. So strictly speaking, that release clause should not have got through the Premiership lawyers. But clearly what's happened is that Bath haven't shown PRL that release clause, and he's free to go. So I think it's what you're dealing with here is a kind of a power struggle between the individual clubs who own the players, as far as I can see, and Premiership Rugby trying to say, look, we need our best players playing club rugby whenever they can.
It says here that Owen Williams, Priestland, Francis, Tipperick, all back. Ball and Tipperick are back after injury, but the others are back at their clubs. I heard today that Roberts, though, is going to stay and play. So that'll find its way out in the press anyway, I'm sure, as the end of the week goes on. They hammered the box in the last fixture, didn't they?
I can't see. Do you know what? I can't see things changing very much. South Africa, as we know, have lost a few games there, but they beat Italy 35-6 away in Italy. So that gave them a little bit of confidence, but I wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, with all the absentees that Wales have got, all those injuries, that some of the injuries you just mentioned, do you think they're still favourites for that game?
No, I think South Africa will win that game. Oh, I think with all the changes, they've made so many changes, the Welsh guys, over the last few weeks. In other Welsh news, Scott Williams, he's leaving the Scarlets. He's going to be joining the Lions. See what I've done there? He's not really. He can't. He's banned from all Lions events moving forward. He's joining the Ospreys. But that's pretty much rounds up all the international games. Is there anything else you'd like to pick up from the internationals? Mike Tindall's behaviour in the green room, thought was unacceptable at times.
Well, listen, he's old news now that Prince Harry's getting married to Meghan. You know, that's it now. He's not on the front pages anymore.
Do you reckon he'll go on the stag do, though? I know Greenwood will have himself put forward for Harry's stag do, definitely.
Well, I did like Greenwood. I will be pushing his cause. I noticed the way Jack Whitehall tweeted at Kensington Palace, am I invited and where's the stag do? But then again, he is a comedian, so it's probably just a joke.
I like it. Well done. OK, let's move on, shall we? Well, that's it for the internationals, Lol. It was great spending some Saturdays with you, although I can't remember anything after 4 o'clock on any three of them. But now, one man returning from international duty to his club in a better state this weekend is England's Mako Vunipola. and the Saracen star was the guest of our live studio show this week. Here are the best bits of all of his chat. It's not very long.
Do you know you have a song? You've got a song like a Maro Itoji song. Do you want to hear it? Do you know he has his own song? Please, choir, can you hit it there, please?
Yeah. For one, two, three,
I don't milk
four.
It, pal. Just get on with it. Nice. That's good.
Yeah, that's quite good. Cheers. They never sing in game day, though, do they?
How are you? How's life?
Yeah, good. Obviously, come back from camp. Feel quite good. Body's in good, healthy. That's a good thing. And now I'm ready to get back into the season with Saris.
I want to talk about Billy for a moment. A, his criticism of your biscuits, which is a major problem. What's the problem with your biscuits? He was slagging you off publicly about your cooking.
Yeah, he always does that. He slags off my cooking, but then he finishes it anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I can't really remember cooking biscuits. It's always healthy with my cooking.
Of course it is. He's always outspoken, and he speaks his mind. We like that about Billy. And his quotes have been interesting over the few weeks, basically talking about the workload on current Premiership players when they're playing for their country as well, and you're coming back from Lions tours, and it's an awful lot of games. And they say maybe it's a bit too much, and there's talk of strike action. Your thoughts on all that, Macca? What do you think? Do you agree with your brother on that front?
Oh, it's tough, obviously, when you're playing highest level, which is what you want to be as a player, and it's always going to take a toll on your body. But I think it's not my place to decide how many games or how long the season is. And for him, I think he just needs to concentrate on his rugby and get back out playing instead of running his mouth a little bit too much.
Oh, there's the slap. There's the clipper in the air. It is interesting, though, because people are listening and the professional game board are meeting at the moment with Premiership Rugby because they want to make sure it's, you know, keeping players safe and healthy over the course of a long season. And this was the headline in The Guardian today. They're saying Premiership may be reduced to 10 teams in a bid to avert player strike. Gentlemen, your thoughts on that?
Well, it's two things. I mean, when you play international rugby like we all have, there's a lot more pressure on you as a player. You know, for Billy and Macca, they're playing at the top end of the game, so European Cup finals, Premiership finals, then they go off and play for England. But then there's a whole group of other players who are back home at their clubs who actually don't play international rugby, and they're not playing that much rugby. So, you know, what I would say is the guys at the top of the game, like Billy and Macca, you know, something has to give because they do play too much rugby. But I think the global season is being discussed, and hopefully, you know, common sense.
It's going to be a tough vote to win that, isn't it? Because 30% of the guys aren't going to vote for it because they're not going to have a club. So it's, you know, and all the top guys are going to inevitably end up in the top 10 clubs. So I think they've got it about right. There's some more rest periods they could have, but you just got to be clever. So round about now, you just give someone a whack, you get a 3 or 4 week break, you get Christmas off, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, New Year's Eve off at home, and then you get a chance to get into the Six Nations really fresh and you can have a proper Christmas dinner.
There you go. Simple, isn't it?
It just takes a little bit more thinking.
No,
it's
you're
all
right.
It
you're always the thinker, weren't you? What's going on out in social media there? What's going on?
Well, I presume we've got loads of questions. We'll pop a few up. We had some early. Some of your old teammates obviously knew you were coming in. Not old teammates. Well, one of them is very old. And here he is. James Haskell. How much cash do you have buried in your garden? Is it true you once ate someone? I think for legal reasons, I wouldn't answer either of those questions.
He's eaten at least two people.
Do you want to dodge that question, or do you want to answer
please,
it? Okay, let's move on
please.
Then.
So you are saying money is buried in your
garden? No, there's no money.
just ignore that.
No, please, go ignore that.
If you weren't, this is from @Thompson21. If you weren't playing rugby, what would you be doing?
Great question. I would not have a clue what I want to be doing.
What do you want to do when you retire then?
Dig the bloody garden up, I'd say.
I'll be gardening, trying to find my cash.
I only know that I like sports or anything to do with, maybe not coaching, but anything in sport, really.
Okay, and if this is from @RugbyStig, have you or Billy tried playing in the other one's position? If so, who was better?
Billy was probably better playing prop than I was at number 8.
Really?
Yeah. I think a bit too slow and too fat to be playing number 8.
You've got a lot of tries from the 22. I think you're just being modest there. Joe Marler. Someone's typed this in for him. Why are your earlobes so flappy?
I keep telling him it's when rugby started. So when rugby started getting serious, my ears took the toll and...
Lol's got an interesting fact on this.
Bigger earlobes, more wisdom. That's what
as well.
You are one smart puppy.
That's why, that's why Marla has tiny earlobes. Have you ever noticed?
At Exploding Softly, is Owen Farrell actually best mates with James Haskell?
They get along.
He says that. I mean,
isn't James Haskell best mates with James Haskell?
No comment.
OK, good one. Well dodged. And I stole that joke off Lawrence, who had it in rehearsals. At Chrono Joe's, what differentiates a prop's diet to another player's diet?
Just eat less.
You eat less?
Yeah.
How hard is it? I mean, you've been in camp for 3 weeks in the hotel, and we've been there, and the food is amazing at that hotel where you stay. I don't want to name where it is, but it's Pennyhill Park. And it's really difficult to stay off the food, isn't it?
It is tough, especially back end of the week. You have a few more treats, but... No, I tend to be quite good at dodging them, to be fair.
Is it still Friday chocolate treats when you all meet in the physio room and then the forwards just hit the backs out the way and then get to the chocolate first?
They actually took it away for a couple of weeks, and the S&C got a bit of an earful from the players, so now they're back. So
yeah,
very happy with
Talk
that.
Talk about the strike for not playing. You don't bring the chocolate on the Friday. There's definitely a strike from the forwards. This is from Angus Hamilton. What is the best way to wind up Billy?
There's a few ways. just be I'm quite grumpy as it is anyway, so he hates that I walk in the training head down the whole time, so he kind of gets into me for that.
Okay, well, you've dodged pretty much every question so far, so let's try this one. Professor Moore, what do England now need to do to become world number one ranked team? It's quite easy, isn't it? Just beat everyone.
Play New Zealand would be nice.
Yeah. That'd be a good way of starting, hopefully. I think the way we are going at the moment, we're on the right path, and we're very pleased with how it's progressing, really.
Who was your biggest... This is from Liam Mayer. Who was your biggest influence growing up?
I used to love watching John Lowe, just the way that he kind of destroyed players on the field. And...
Yeah, thanks for that.
Oh, sorry. I didn't actually...
Austin used to love watching John Lowe.
I used to love him watching. Well, I mean, he was fast and very strong, and he had an amazing way of just batting people off like flies.
Yeah.
And, anyway... It's so much nice.
You're all fixed for this weekend then, yeah?
No, all good, yeah. So feel good after the camp and ready to go for it, yeah.
So, Austin, having come back from international duty, you and I, who would you say are the kind of real winners and losers in terms of players coming back in broken pieces? And, you know, what sort of clubs do they come back to? Because some clubs have taken advantage of players missing. Saracens, as you say, have lost a couple of fixtures.
Lost their last four games, Saracens.
Very, very... Is that a worry, or is that just because so many players are away on international duty and they'll click straight back into gear?
Two of them Anglo-Welsh. The other two were difficult fixtures. Exeter played very well in the last game. I don't think it'll be too much of a worry, and in some ways for Sarries, I think they quite like it mid-season. They know that they've got their big stars coming back. They might not all play every week, but just the fact that they're back at their club and they're back in training, it gives everybody a bit of a lift.
And I think with Saracens, because they're in such a strong position before those guys went away, they were at the top of the table, they could probably afford to lose one or two games.
Yeah.
Unlike, say, Harlequins, who have kind of really struggled with the likes of Brown, Kerr, Robshaw, all the various players being away.
And those guys have all played, and a few of them have had injuries, and they're going to be expected to come straight back into that Quins side. It's difficult. I think if you look at the losers, I would say Harlequins have been a loser, Saracens less so, Leicester definitely. If you look at the bookmakers, Leicester have moved from predicted to finish third to now predicted to finish fifth or sixth. Gloucester, on the other hand, who at the start of the season were predicted to finish eighth, are now predicted to finish third. So it's amazing how a two-week period of the Premiership can really turn things around. And I think Gloucester have been excellent. Worcester in their last two games, winning at Welford Road for the first time ever at the weekend, is a huge success for them. And Exeter back at the top of the pile. So those are the three winners for me.
And if we go to the other end of the table, you know, with, as you say, Worcester picking up that win, Irish going down at Wasps, although they put in a very good performance, and the week before against Bath. It's probably a little bit too early to say they're totally doomed, because they're still picking up bonus points. They picked up one against Bath and another one against Wasps.
Yeah, it's too early to say they're totally doomed, but they're totally doomed. They've got no chance of surviving this league whatsoever.
Well, speaking of which, there is one way they may survive, and that's if
relegation and promotion is ring-fenced, and that was something that was talked about already. It's come up and reared its head again this week. Bristol are cruising in the Championship with a budget, obviously...
several times, well, bigger than most
several
countries.
Several times the size of your house, really. I mean, it's...
It's not that big. It's bigger than the Vatican's budget, but it's not bigger than my house.
It's in the multi-millions. I was talking about the outhouse, not your house.
Okay, fair enough.
But whoever sort of, you know, ends up finishing bottom out of Irish or Worcester or perhaps one of the others that gets dragged into it, they could possibly be given a reprieve. I mean, what's your view on that?
Well, I saw something else as well today about a 10-league Aviva Premier, a 10-team league. So they're obviously, they've got concerns about player welfare, but the players haven't got that much concern about the rising wages. And so, you know, they both go hand in hand. It's a bit like the NFL. This happened in the NFL years and years ago, where they started complaining, they got paid more, and then they realised, you know what, over the course of our career, we're going to earn about the same, but our careers are shorter.
Yeah, shorter career, more money. But the other, yeah. I mean, the other option is a 13-team premiership, and then every so often each team gets a bye week, gets a free bye.
Well, it'd be interesting if they did it after the end of this season, wouldn't it? Because obviously Bristol, who've stacked most of their wage bill into next season, would be slightly aggrieved, allegedly. I always like promotion and relegation because it's great to look up and it's great to look down in the league, and so it applies pressure and different standards of play, and you get to the March, April, May period and sides are absolutely panicking for a win, and it's great TV for us.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, but if that's going to happen, the team that comes up has to be given a parachute payment that allows them to spend the same salary as the teams that are already up there. Because at the moment, if you look at the top of the Premiership and pretty much all the way down to about 8th or 9th, you've got teams that are spending up to, you know, £7-8 million, whatever the salary cap is. And then suddenly you get a team like London Welsh or whoever it might be that comes up and they just go straight back down again. So, you know.
Yeah, but I think the way that they've got round that is by getting rid of the playoffs in the Championship, because that enables a side to plan. They don't know. You could be the best side like Bristol all year and then you lose your 10 in the first 5 minutes of one of the playoff games. He doesn't play the following week and he's central to everything you do, and it's an unfair playing field in that stage. But so I think they've levelled that out slightly.
Yeah, but it's just interesting because the team that have come up, Exeter at them, everyone says, oh, look at Exeter. When Exeter came up into the Premiership, the salary cap was about £2.5 million.
Yeah.
So therefore, the gap between them and everyone else was bridgeable. Now, when a team comes up, the salary cap is now £7 or £8 million.
Yeah.
You know, that becomes a lot harder to bridge that gap.
Yeah. Because you can't actually sign Nonu then, can you? Which is a bit of a pain because you have to sell everything for him. In fact, you're not going to stay up if the team's run out and out comes Bath and then Nonu comes out by himself. Bath versus Exeter. Oh, it's going to be hard for him today. Apparently, they only lost by 4 points in the trial. Not a bad player.
Right. Well, looking at some of the individual fixtures, talking about losers in the, or the guys that came off worst in the international window, both these sides, we look at the Northampton Saints against Falcons. They've both gone on a bit of a run, haven't they? Neither side have got that kind of winning feeling. And Newcastle, having started the season brilliantly, Northampton, apart from the Saracens game, picked up really, really well. But I think both sides are on a kind of four-match losing streak.
Yeah, Newcastle had a relatively easy run of fixtures at the start, which did help them. They were playing good rugby, that's a given. Northampton, on the other hand, turned round that first game against Saris and then went on a really good run, found themselves at the top of the league, but have really lost their way, particularly in terms of their style. You know, they've still got all the same personnel, but they're playing like they did in the first half against Saracens for chunks of 20 or 30 minutes of each game now. And that's really hard to turn around. I think those sides, both of them, will be desperate. Friday night, BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD, 7 p.m. We've got Lee Dixon there. He'll have plenty to say about his old club and also probably about his brother being the new referee that everyone's talking about. But they both suffered disappointing losses last weekend. To Saints to Sale and Newcastle to Gloucester. I mean, Gloucester really hammered Newcastle up there. So they'll both want to bounce back.
I know Newcastle have won in the past at Franklin's Gardens, but, you know, two sides lacking a little bit of confidence. I'd see probably the home side just edging that one.
Interesting to see how Dino approaches this game at Newcastle, because they got nothing to lose. They play their best rugby when they throw it around. Mm. But we might start to see the first pressure points accumulating within the Premiership now, and we'll see that on Friday night. Other Friday night games, I don't know who you think are going to win, Worcester or Sale?
Well, Worcester got their tails up now, haven't they? And you'd have to say that suddenly, with that win, they get that confidence that comes back in there. I saw Sale up at home at Northampton, and it was a horrible, dark, you know, wet night at the AJ Bell, and they just about edged it. But
you sound surprised. Have you ever been to the AJ Bell and it's not a horrible, dark, wet night?
No, you've not seen my BT Sport contract. No AJ Bell.
Oh, no AJ Bell. And okay, so that's good.
That's good to know.
Yeah,
that's not true, by the way. I have been there.
No, but I'd like to swap. I seem to be at Exeter a lot at the minute, which is 226 miles from my house. Oh. I quite happily swap with Sale. I go and see my dad, and you know, so if you want to do a trade at any stage, just let me know. But who do you think Worcester are going to win?
I think Worcester will just edge that. Yes, I do. No Steve Diamond allowed in the stadium at the moment, but it seems to be having quite a good effect on the team.
They're playing a lot better. Long way that continue, eh, Dimes? Okay, and then on Saturday we've got a double header, and it starts down at Sandy Park. Exeter Chiefs versus Bath. That's live on BT Sport 2 on Saturday afternoon from 1:30 p.m. And our guest there is David Flatman.
Tell you what, he had a spectacularly shiny black sort of bin liner jacket on last weekend. I noticed he tweeted a picture of him and Rihanna wearing the same jacket, and he said, "Who do you think carried it off a bit better?"
I think she gave it to him. I think on a recent night out that they had him in, he's A-lister, his flats, that's where he mixes, that's how he rolls. But Exeter will be in high spirits, lol, won't they?
Yeah, I think, they're aside, you know, we talk about winners and losers from international duty. They don't seem to be affected really very much at all. That's not to say that they don't provide players to other teams, to international teams, but I just find, you know, they're just in good form, aren't they? They don't get carried away with themselves, they're the champions, and I think, unlike other teams in the past, when you carry that tag of being Premiership champions, they seem to be carrying it okay. You know, it can often be a burden, but, you know, they're sitting there, they're top of the Premiership. And, you know, yes, of course, people will say Saracens were missing players, but that was still a very, very good Saracen side that they beat at Allianz Park. And it wasn't just the fact they won. I think it was the way that they won the game. They didn't panic, as so many sides do. They didn't try and force things, as other sides do when they go there. You know, they found their way back into the game, and then they hit them right at the death with that lovely try. So,
and they say now, they'll openly say, we know how to beat Saracens.
Yeah.
Are they getting the upper hand in the mind games, do you think?
I think with a full strength side, you know, you look at that Saracen side with the likes of Itoje and Farrell, that's a very different proposition. But suddenly a few of those players that get left behind, you know, I mean, first time I've seen some of those Saracens players not necessarily impose themselves. So it's definitely a balancing out there, but I don't think anyone's getting too carried away.
Yeah, I think Exeter look pretty damn strong at the minute, but Bath are probably the one side physically, particularly in the pack, that can take them that rumble game on. Bath have got some injuries, but they've got some guys coming back. They haven't got Toby M. They haven't got him. He's not playing, and he has been in fantastic form recently. So you have to make Exeter favourites for that one.
And our second live game, Wasps take on Leicester at 4:15 on Saturday on BT Sport 2, and the head of the latest instalment of this blossoming local rivalry.
Did you write that yourself? Because that is, I mean, that's almost...
It's just poetry.
It's
almost from Stratford.
It's beautiful.
Ali Eakin headed over to Coventry to chat to Elliot Daly, and here's the best of their chat.
It was good at the start, but it sort of tailed off towards the end.
That tends to be the way I perform.
So, Elliot, Wasps, it's been a bit kind of up and down, a little bit all over the place. You had that period, didn't you, where nothing went right, and then now everything seems to be slightly slotting back together again. Is that the way you see it? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, I've been away for a couple of weeks, but I think having the boys back training, likes of Sips and Carl Eastman, just some of the backs that are coming back at the moment, is really just bolstering our squad and making, I think, training a bit more competitive, which we probably needed. We were running on sort of the bare minimum for a while. So to have everyone back, everyone fit, I think it's good.
The attack is such a big part of what happens at this club. The back line, obviously, as we know, when it moves, it really crackles. It must be thrilling to be part of when it's all functioning beautifully.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's some quality backs we've got at this club, and got a lot of world-class players in the back line. So, and even going down right to the squad players that we've got at the moment, guys that aren't getting in the 23 are quality as well. So, I mean, when it goes well, it goes very well. It probably needs to fire a little bit definitely this weekend with a tough Leicester team coming. But yeah, when it's good, it's good.
When you were losing those games, was there an element of panic's the wrong word, but you know, if you stack up 4 or 5 defeats as you did in a row, does that sort of begin to creep in and kind of eat away at confidence?
I think we were panicking a little bit, probably, to be honest. But I think when you panic, you make it worse, and that's probably what we didn't want to do at that stage. I think we just desperately needed a win. I don't know who the win was when we finally got one, but after that, I think everyone forgot about it and realised what we can do as a team. And we were losing games by a couple of points and 7 points or 8 points. It wasn't losing the game by 40 points, so it wasn't a massive issue, but I think our attack probably wasn't firing then, but it is now, so it's great.
And particularly off the back of what happened last season all the way to the Premiership final, and then to find yourself languishing in the lower echelons of the Premiership probably wasn't what everybody had planned, right?
No, definitely not, yeah. I think we were ready definitely for the season, but mentally we probably thought it would just happen. I think when we had a couple of losses, we got down to it and we're like, right, we need to get back on this now. We want to get back into that final game. That's what we want to do. So we needed to perform, and luckily we got a couple of wins, and now the squad's looking good and bolstered and ready to go.
And Tigers, obviously everybody gets very excited about Wasps, Tigers games. Is that the same for you? I mean, does it still hold that special appeal? A, because now you're very close by, and B, because of all the history?
Yeah, definitely. I think the history between those two games, those two clubs in games in the past has been massive. And I think when you're growing up, you're watching those games and you want to be part of it. And now being part of it's great. And probably I never thought that Leicester would be a local derby when I was growing up and playing for Wasps. But I think now we've got it. We've had it for, I think this is our fifth one now. Fifth game in a couple of years. It's great. And the fans they bring are great as well. And there's always a little bit of niggle in the games that we're looking forward to. And yeah, it's one of those special games.
When you were growing up watching those matches, did you get a proper taste for the intensity, what it meant to everybody involved, you know, those big, big beasts going at each other, Delalio and Johnson?
Yeah, it did seem more physical, those games. I don't know what it was. It just seemed you'd watch a normal game and you'd watch one of them games and you'd be like, yeah, that is a lot more physical. So, yeah, definitely, it's definitely something you think of.
And when you think back to those sorts of skippers, does it feel like a kind of past age now? Is it moved to a different sort of sphere for you?
I think it has, but just because we probably had a couple of years where we weren't performing, and we had a totally new squad. And since we moved up here, I think it's we're trying to create our legacy up here now, and that's what we want to do. We want to concentrate on us, and obviously we remember what happened in the past with that era. But I think we want to try and make new waves with this team, and hopefully we can do that again this season.
Those kind of Premiership finals, those sort of European finals against Tigers, are they referenced in a week like this, in the build up to a game like this, or is it parked?
No, it's pretty much parked. I think we just concentrate on the last couple of games we had against them, probably. And I think the last game we had was the semi-final last year, and where we probably didn't perform to our best ability, and we scored late on to win it in the end. But yeah, we don't want it to be that close this weekend.
So they've got a number of players coming back in. As far as you're concerned, you are the England representative because of one or two casualties for Wasps, but they've got a raft of players coming in, haven't they? The Youngs, Coles, Genges, Mays of this world. What kind of threats are you particularly concerned about when you think of the Tigers now?
I think with the Tiger size, you always have physicality. I think Coley, obviously, at scrum time is a major threat for us, and Genge in open play is a wrecking ball as well. So you match that with Youngs, Ford, Johnny May, the form he's in, and maybe if Tamu is fit as well, they've obviously got a tasty back line as well. So we're going to have to control the game as much as possible, and we know probably Tigers teams of the last couple of years had that forward pack, but maybe didn't have the spark in the backs, but this year they've definitely got it, and you can see that, and we're going to have to shut that down early.
What about, give us a flavour, I know it's not your area of expertise, the front row, but Ellis Genge on the march, coming at you, you'll have had to deal with it in training, I'm guessing, with England. How is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, obviously he's a very physical guy, and he loves the ball in his hands, and I think that's all you want as a player. I think if he's coming at you, then you've got to go low, haven't you, really? That's the only way forward to get him down. He's obviously a quality player, and he likes to get his hands on the ball as much as possible.
And when you see someone like Johnny May in the kind of form that he's in, Elliot, you've obviously been in cracking form yourself, scoring some fabulous tries. Is there a kind of added bite to the weekend, given that, you know, two of the quickest blokes in the Premiership going up against each other, so much at stake. Do you think about those things?
No, I don't think about that.
Come on.
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't. But yeah, I think it's weird when you come out of camp. It's you kind of you look forward to playing them because you get to see those guys again after the game and stuff, and you get to challenge yourself against them. So that's all I'm thinking about this weekend.
We know you're quick, and I know that you've been measured pretty close to sort of Carlin Isles territory on that try you scored against the Samoans. But a foot race, you and Johnny May, who's taking that?
I reckon Johnny's got it. He's a very quick individual. And
do you have him over a short distance?
I don't know. I don't think so. He is rapid. He's an athlete, and he showed it over the last how many rounds of the Premiership and in the England games as well. Yeah, I think he's the one to catch at the moment.
So, Wasps Leicester, I mean, who better to talk about that fixture, really, live on BT Sport 2, Saturday, 4:15pm, than...
You and Ben Kay. Sorry, I'll just get him on the phone, see what he thinks. It's a big, big game because of where they both are in the league, how they're both playing. Wasps weren't particularly great last weekend against Irish, a different side for Wasps, admittedly. And Leicester at home. Leicester have really struggled without Ford. Without George Ford in that 10 shirt, they have not been putting their game together.
Yeah, and I guess for Leicester, you know, for them, the season has kind of gone, up until last weekend, it's kind of almost exactly what they expected, really. They're sort of there or thereabouts. For Wasps, on the other hand, they had that shocking start to the season, albeit they played some tough fixtures. Saracens away, Exeter away. So I don't think anyone was panicking too much. But they've sort of slowly but surely climbing their way back up to where people expect them to be. And as you say, you know, if Leicester win, then suddenly there's a gap between them and Wasps. If Wasps win, then they leapfrog Leicester and they're into third place, and suddenly their season's up and running.
Season, it's all rosy again for Dai Young. He'll be out, you know, he'll be celebrated. What do you reckon? He'd go out for a quiet pizza or all you can eat somewhere?
Well, he'd have more than one, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I think he'd celebrate with a quiet night in, personally. But yeah, there's a lot of players coming back, though, for Tigers. Yeah. Cole, Genge, Youngs, Ford, Johnny May. So they're getting real X factor and stability back, Leicester, and maybe Manu Tuilagi as well. So it's a big, big game, that, yeah, I think. Game of the weekend for me.
It is, and it's a repeat of last year's, semi-final, Viva Premiership semi-final, which Leicester were winning until 3 minutes to go. So, you know, that tells you exactly how close it's going to be. Normally, when you have home advantage, you'd say it probably favours one side, particularly more the home side. But in this occasion, because it's a derby and because of the history of the sides, you know, maybe not the most recent history, but, you know, these are two sides that love to go toe-to-toe with each other. So, you know, I think it's, as you say, the internationals coming up, it's really on a knife edge, that one.
Yeah, we had an interesting meeting. Well, I'll say it was interesting. It was about data and stats this week. And how much do you think they've done some real strong analysis on this? And I think I'm allowed to say it because I didn't sign an NDA. But how much points do you think it is playing at home value? And this has been proven now.
Well, there must be statistically, there must be an average.
There is an average, yeah.
I would say 4 to 5 points.
Oh my gosh, you should have. Are you a genius?
No.
Did someone tell you about the meeting?
No.
Oh, well, it is. It's between 4 and 5 points. Yeah. Well done, Lawrence. Yeah. You have passed your first ever test.
That's because I gave away a lot of penalties, which were only worth 3 points. When I played.
Yeah, but they say that nothing to do with the teams, but the referee is worth 5 points at home on average.
Well, we did a lot of stats when I used to play against Leicester, and because they had the biggest crowd in the Premiership of any other team, the referee's decisions just at the Welford Road alone used to change as the game went on.
Yeah,
and that's why you had to play more and more field position down in Leicester's half as the game went on, otherwise you'd lose the game.
So any referees who are listening to this pod and who are thinking of refereeing up at the Rico at the weekend, bear that in mind, will you? Bear that in mind. It's not the only game on Saturday, though. We've covered two of them. Gloucester versus London Irish. Gloucester at home, London Irish away. Gloucester win for me.
Yeah, they will win. And I have to say, and probably eat my words a little bit, didn't know much about the new coaches coming into the Gloucester setup, but they've been the perennial underachievers every single year, haven't they? So yeah. I think they finished 6th, 7th, 8th. And everything, that the way they started the season, suggested that was going to be exactly the same. And I'll be the first one to admit I've been wrong about Gloucester in our predictors. I've always backed against them, and they've really surprised me. You know, they had that victory against Exeter at the beginning of the season, and then they just had a couple of bad performances. But you've got to say that against London Irish, you fancy them to continue that run.
Yeah, you certainly do. And then Sunday, you travel back down to London, don't you, for... oh, no, you don't.
Oh,
do
no,
you?
No.
Are you going?
Yeah, no, I'll be there Saturday.
Should I say where we're going first?
I'll be there Saturday night.
Saturday night.
And then, obviously, I'll get on the train. You'll have a sort of 250, 260-mile round trip. You chuck the traffic in. You'll be home at about midnight.
No, I won't. I'm taking the fast car. It'll take me about 2 hours.
So, anyway, I shall be at Harlequins v Saracens, which is a belting game that will be on BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD Sunday, 2:30 kickoff. Join us there. Join me there. Don't join Austin. He'll be carving the roast beef.
I'm putting a Christmas tree up, actually. I don't know whether it's too early, the third.
Are you going to go on the top of it this time?
No, not anymore. I've put a bit of weight on recently. It might bend the branches. And the kids are struggling to get me up there nowadays. Last year was a lot easier. I was cycling a lot. But, yeah, neither team managed to win during the international break. So that will have to change, won't it? And Saracens, you look at the names they welcome back. Vunipola, George, Itoje, Farrell, Lazowski, Harlequins, Marler, Robshaw, Kerr, Brown.
Yeah, and there's always a little bit of edge between these two sides. I mean, I think Saracens have gone there in the past and won comfortably. Last year, Quinns actually won this fixture 17-10. And I remember it being a really physical battle and Quinns sort of really upped the ante. So, you know, as you say, both sides will be desperate to, you know, get that four or five points, you know, back on the in the table. And it's going to be tough.
And you'd have thought that maybe Quinns can play all their stars and say, right, we've got Europe coming up. Maybe you can have a rest in the following 2 weeks. Don't think Quinns are expecting to qualify out of that group, are they?
Well, they've still got a chance. All the sides there in that group have got a chance. La Rochelle probably out in front. You've got Wasps, obviously, as well. But, yeah, I mean, who knows?
Whereas Saracens are all hands to the pump.
Yeah, I mean, Saracens will want to win. If I was to put you on the line there, Austin, what would you say?
I think... Can I wait till I see the teams first? Because I think that will have a big influence. If Owen Farrell plays, Saracens win. There you go.
You've heard it here.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's fact. It's pretty much, I think his win percentage is relatively high in a Saracen shirt. So let's see if he is playing. Okay. But there's going to be a little bit lack of confidence with both sides and they want to change that around. Thanks very much, Lawrence. You enjoy that?
Yeah, I loved it with
you. I mean, it went quickly, didn't it?
Well, I mean, listen, when it's with
time
you.
Time in a really small blue room with me with a headset on.
I always feel when it's with you.
What dreams are made of.
It's always a little level above anyone else, really.
Yeah, I agree. You are right sometimes. But thank you for listening as well to the Rugby Tonight podcast. We're back on the road next week with the Rugby Tonight on Tour crew visiting Battersea Ironsides in southwest London. Hugo Monia joins Martin Bayfield there to digest all the weekend's action. And Lawrence will be joined by Nick Mullins on the pod next week. Oh my God, bring some matchsticks for your eyelids, lol. You'll certainly need them. But they're going to be trying to preview the return to European rugby action. And they'll be taking you through everything from our shores and abroad. Remember to subscribe to the pod so it's delivered straight to your device every Thursday morning. If you've enjoyed listening today, please give us 5-star rating because the last time Lawrence had 5 stars, he nearly got promoted to the manager of the Reading branch of McDonald's. So give us 5 stars and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, Built Ford proud.